Good morning, everyone, and in the East, I guess it's good afternoon. Thank you all for joining us again in our Ag in Uncertain Times webinar series. We're pleased you're joining us this morning and hope that you had a festive and happy holiday. This morning, we're very pleased to have with us Jason Henderson from the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City, Omaha branch, who I will introduce a bit more in just a minute. My name is John Newkirk, and I'm with Washington State University, and I'll be emceeing this morning's session. Our Ag in Uncertain Times webinar series, as probably most of you know, because most of you probably repeat attendees, has been designed around providing information useful to helping producers and others meet the challenge of today's uncertain economy. And this morning, we're really pleased to have a perspective on the financial condition and lending in the ag sector and looking at what some of the implications are for that looking forward. This morning, our format is much the same as it's been in the past. If you have questions for Jason as his presentations go along, as this slide shows, you can enter those in the small window at the bottom of the chat box in the left. Our team that's working behind the scenes, if there are several questions along a similar theme, they'll meld them into one, give them to me. I'll supply them verbally to Jason after he is through with his presentation. Also, if you're having technical difficulties with your audio or other issues, you can type that into there as well. And usually one of our team members will get back to you privately about that. Our biggest complaint has been audio, and the technology isn't perfect. And traditionally, what that has actually been proven to work out to be is mostly bandwidth out at your area. It isn't always the case, and so don't hesitate if you're having trouble hearing or something, typing that in there so that we can make the corrections if we need to. The Ag in Uncertain Times webpage has a link to all of our past webinars going all the way back to June, and all of the webinars, a recording of them is there for you to look at. The slide presentations are also there that you can download and look through at your leisure. It's a marvelous resource base. Next Wednesday, the directors of the Regional Risk Management Education Centers are going to discuss available risk management material from their respective regions. And I would suggest that all of those regional centers now have requests for applications out. Where there is grant dollars available to put a lot of what we've been talking here to work. Unfortunately, the due date on those pre-proposals is December the 15th, so you need to go look up and get to that information as quickly as possible. And then on December the 18th, we're going to draw some conclusions from across the series that we think suggest some strong actions for ag professionals in terms of working with farm and ranch families. And also, our team will have a set of suggestions, demonstrations on how to effectively use this webinar material. It's still all current, very useful, very valuable information. I used some of it recently in a workshop with a group of grain producers and was very effective in that environment. Another resource out there is the eExtension website, mitnet.extension.org. Our information is there as well as a lot of other information. If you're having trouble seeing the slides, once we get into them, you click on the full screen button. And that'll toggle full screen. That will blank out the chat button at the left of your screen, And so if you want to enter something in the chat button, you just toggle that full screen button and it'll that will show up again. So there are a few polling questions that we'd like to for you to respond to. If you would, please. This first one is about what area of the country you're from. And it's very easy. You just run your mouse up, click on one of those. We'll move to one other question here in just a moment, and then we'll be moving on to our featured presenter this morning. So I would come back to the Ag and Uncertain Times webpage. At the end of the program this morning, we'll have a file that you can download that's virus-free that has that web address in it. In today's world, it's also simply possible to just go into your search engine, whether it's Google or one of the others, type in Ag in Uncertain Times. And at least on my search engine, one of the first web pages that pops up is the Ag in Uncertain Times webpage. And if you're interested in the past web materials, you just click on the webinar tab that's up in the top right-hand part of that web page, and can find your way to past webinars as well as to the slides. Jason Henderson is branch executive and vice president of the Omaha branch of the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City, and serves as the bank's regional economist and representative in the state of Nebraska, and he recruits and works closely with the branch's board of directors and is responsible for briefing the Kansas City Fed's president. What Jason probably isn't aware is that he provided the genesis of thought that led some of us to begin thinking about what might be coming and how we ought to be thinking about the current economic conditions, and that was 18 months ago when he gave a presentation to our Risk Management Education annual center's meeting in Nebraska City. And anyway, the presentation there made us sit up and think about what might be coming, even though he was really clear in not predicting that. But we want to thank Jason for his very cogent presentation then. I haven't had a chance to do that. But, and before coming to his present position, Jason served as senior economist with the Center for the Study of Rural America at the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City. And he has a PhD from Purdue University, and his research interests focus around regional economic issues, including the rural economy. And Jason is sought after as a presenter and is written in leading media outlets such as the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, the Financial Times, and USDA, US Today, and also has provided expert testimony on the Hill around agricultural credit conditions. He's a native of Arlington, Iowa, where he was raised on a small dairy farm. So at this point, we're loading Jason's materials, and we're going to turn the program over to him. And I've had a chance to glance through his slide set, and I'm really interested myself. A lot of excellent information. Don't hesitate to type in your question. Without further ado, Jason, thank you very much for being willing to join us here on this webinar series.
Well, welcome everyone. I'm here. I want to talk about Ag in Uncertain Times. Basically, where we're sitting at today is the recession is over. Now, many of you might not believe that in terms of the feeling that you're getting from the countryside or walking around your main streets, but the U.S. economy did rise at 2.8% in the third quarter, and so we are now in the process of a recovery. The challenge that we have is that most people expect the recovery to be basically anemic. And the jargon that we've been using is it could potentially be another jobless recovery where economic growth is not strong enough to increase jobs or income over the next few quarters. Going forward, most economic forecasts have U.S. economic activity growing at about that 3% range. And traditionally, we grow between 4.5% and 9% in the first year after recovery. So we're going to be sluggish coming out of this steep recession and financial crisis. So the basic question that we have is, during this recession, it really stalled the farm boom with this broad-based collapse in demand. And the primary question that we have is, will the recovery spark a demand rebound? Because when you look at agriculture in general, this year in terms of 2009, from a real basis in terms of real net farm incomes, we had significant drops in net farm income from about $88 billion down to $54 billion, a significant drop. And so this is a daunting challenge for agriculture. And this year, most of the biggest losses have emerged from the livestock sector, not so much in the crops. So the question going forward again is, will demand rebound enough to boost net farm incomes next year? And I think what we need to look at and start with is U.S. food sales. What we've seen in 2009 has been a significant decline in food expenditures. It's not that we're eating fewer quantities of food, but we're reducing our expenditures. And the biggest declines have emerged at away from home sales in terms of previous expenditure. Now, going in terms of this area, in terms of 2009, to very put it very simply, what's been happening is that people are eating fewer steaks at restaurants and eating more hamburger at home. And so they've shifted consumption away from the restaurants to at-home sales. Now, consumer spending has been falling, and I think a lot of it we're looking at this year is going to be what does consumer spending do going forward? We've had significant declines in wealth. We've had significant job losses. We've had incomes that have declined as well. I think a lot of what we're gauging and looking at right now is, what is this holiday shopping season going to be? What is Santa going to bring this year? Is he going to bring stronger sales activity on main streets and at our restaurants? Or is it going to be a lot of coal in the stocking again? If you look at some of the initial reports, brick and mortar sales on Black Friday were a bit anemic. But some of the reports on the internet sales were actually quite strong. So I think we're going to have to see how this goes through in terms of this holiday season. But I think it'll give us a good gauge on what is happening going forward in terms of 2010. Now, the one thing that's been real positive the last couple of months, though, has our value in 2008. With this recession, we had some trimming of that export activity in 2009. But throughout 2009, when you compare the April forecast on the right-hand chart versus the September forecast, we've seen the forecasts being raised, a much positive sign for export activity. And there's a couple of things driving it. We've seen world export growth outside the United States much stronger. For example, many European countries actually posted positive job economic gains in the second quarter of this year. We've seen China's turnaround. At the beginning of the year, many people were expecting China's economy to grow roughly 6.5% to 7%. Now the estimates are up to 9%, so there's stronger growth. All of this was driven by various different stimulus packages going forward in those countries. We've also been seeing now the lower value of the dollar. When the financial crisis really intensified last fall, everybody flocked to safe haven currencies. It raised the value of the dollar. As the financial crisis has eased, we've seen the value of the dollar come down as there's been fewer demands for U.S. dollars and that safe haven currency and the safe haven investments of U.S. treasuries. So all of this in general, I think, is boosting agricultural exports in terms of stronger world growth, especially in those emerging countries that increase their food consumption. coupled with a lower value of the dollar that makes our goods cheaper, is a positive sign for agricultural exports, at least through the first part of 2010. One of the questions, though, is in terms of what's the sustainability of growth in the world economies. A lot of it has been driven by different stimulus packages. As these packages begin to wind down toward the second half of 2010, how sustainable is that demand, not only in the U.S., but also globally as well? The next thing that we need to look at is we've also seen a rise in crude oil prices. And I think that's one of the things in terms of energy markets really shaping the profitability and demand for agricultural products. We've seen corn prices rise. We've seen the ethanol price edge up as well. And that has translated into a bigger price spread between ethanol and corn, as shown in the blue bars, which has increased. And this is the spread is really an indication of profitability in the ethanol business. And profitability has increased the last couple of months. I think this is something that's going to has helped support stronger demand for corn prices. We've seen ethanol plants that were offline have come back online going forward. So I think one of the things, the dynamics and a couple of the risks that we have over the near term is what is from the export sector, what is the sustainability of economic growth? Is it going to be weak? Is that going to stall a little bit or slow and temper some of the demand rebound that we would typically expect coming out of a recession? And what's the impact of that value of the dollar? How does that pass through to commodity prices in general? How does that pass through in terms of crude oil prices? And how does that work through the ethanol market? Given kind of where we're at in terms of the demand, I want to talk a little bit about specific sectors and how it really, the macro picture could have an impact on livestock. I think we all know the story that there's been a rebalancing in the livestock sector to match supplies with weaker, lower demand. And so if you look at U.S. slaughter, the first readjustments were emerging in the chicken poultry industry. Pork did a little bit. Beef sector had stronger slaughter activity in 2007 and 2008. The last sector to do some supply adjustments has been the dairy industry. And if you look at profitability, it's not surprising that the dairy sector has been struggling with profits compared to the other livestock sectors. But with these supply adjustments, we've seen some of an improvement in the break-even levels in terms of cattle and hogs. Cattle prices are just a little bit below break-even costs. Earlier this summer, they're at break-even cost levels, but break-even costs have risen here recently with higher corn prices. The other thing that's been going on in terms of the hog industry, we've seen a lot of fluctuation in hog prices, but they still remain well below break-even costs. Last year, at the end of 2007 and the first part of 2008, we had strong export activity of pork coinciding with the Olympics. Once the Olympics was over, we saw the export activity decline. But I think everybody was going to get some rebound in the hog price and in hog pork sales. In terms of the poultry export activity, there are some policy risks out there in terms of the openness of various different markets to U.S. Protein and meats in particular. But when you look at it from a macro standpoint, how does this impact of this anemic recession potentially impact livestock and protein demand? And a colleague of mine, we did a short little study here recently where we looked at per capita expenditures on beef, pork, poultry, and milk over the last few recessions since the 1970s. And if you look at the double dip recessions in terms of 81 and 82. During recessions, there was, in terms of the red bars, there was a dramatic slowdown in terms of per capita expenditure growth on our protein products. And then quickly after the recession and as the 1 year after into a recovery, protein expenditures or per capita expenditures tended to increase after the 1981 and 1982 recessions. However, in the 1990s and the 2001 recessions, we had jobless recoveries. And so while we had the slowdown in per capita expenditure growth during the 1990 and 2001 recessions, we actually had contractions in per capita expenditures during that jobless recoveries of those period of times. Currently, in the current recession of 2007-2009, our per capita expenditures on our protein products has declined. If we have another jobless recovery, what is that going to mean going forward? Most labor markets, in terms of, there's a lot of wide variety in terms of when is the labor market going to rebound? When are jobs going to be added? Unemployment rates from the Federal Reserve standpoint are expected to remain fairly high through 2010. On a monthly basis, it takes at least 100,000 net new jobs to bring down the unemployment rate. Right now, we're losing about 200,000 jobs per month. So we need to have a big turnaround in terms of that job market outlook before we even start bringing down that unemployment rate. And then the unemployment rate has to come down before we even start adding stronger income growth and stimulating demand. So I think the labor market is going to be weak, particularly through the first half of 2010. We'll probably see some stronger labor market gains toward the end of the year heading into 2011. Now, from the crop side, the perspective really depends on your viewpoint. I went back home over Thanksgiving. I was quite fortunate that we had some good weather, so I didn't have to spend all my time harvesting crops. But at the same time, the profit perspective, it always depended upon what their viewpoint was of what they were referencing to. If you're comparing today's profitability to 2008, we're probably less optimistic about economic activity on the crop sectors. But if you really compare to 2006, there's some reasons for strength. Now, one of the things I think from the crop side, I always start with supplies. And even though we're having big bumper crops in the U.S. in terms of soybeans, fall crops, we've had big crops in wheat, if you look at world-ending stocks, in general, on the grain side, we're still low as a percent of total use. Looking at USDA's production supply distribution database, what you have is that ending stocks for corn and rice are about 20% of global use. They've gone up a little bit from the past couple of years, but they still remain well below our historical trends between the 1980s and 2000. We're more looking more like in terms of inventory use, what we were in the 1970s. Wheat has gone up here recently on a global basis in terms of global inventories, but it still remains in line with more historical trends. So supplies in general remain relatively low, even under a bumper crop scenario here in the U.S. Now, then the question becomes, what happens if regarding demand? With tight supplies, this leads to potential volatility in the market if you get rising demand or some harvest disruptions. And so what we've seen this year is a rise in the fall rise in the crop prices from corn, wheat, and soybeans. Crop prices have rallied since the harvest began. We've had a fall rally, which is not very typical. That usually happens over the course of history. So, given these price declines, I think the big question is we can talk about a new plateau, but I think the biggest question that I have is, what's the plateau in terms of new opportunities, in terms of profits? Where are profits going to emerge from? What is the profit levels of 2010 look like compared to this year? What I've done, credit returns above the variable costs or operating costs, I've used USDA data in terms of the 2010 forecast of crop production for wheat, soybeans, corn, and rice. USDA expects that variable costs of production are going to rise another 8 to 9% in 2010 there. Even with those cost increases, then I applied what I would trend yields to wheat, corn, soybeans, and rice, and multiplied that by a price and subtracted the cost from those gross market revenues to get some sense of what's going to happen in terms of profitability. And if you look at the chart, wheat, corn, soybeans, and rice, it looks like it could be the most likely case that profit margins at least market returns above variable costs will be in line with 2009 levels, well below 2008 record highs, but still well above the levels that most producers earned in 2006. So again, I think going forward, this is a pretty good picture and a pretty good outlook for the crop markets going forward. And to give you some base case in terms of what I was plugged in for prices, on an average yield price, I was thinking I just used wheat would be about $5.60. Soybeans was a little bit lower than what the current market conditions are. I plugged in a $9 per bushel price. Corn was about $3.90, and rice was about $14.50. So I think in terms of those estimates, looking at next year to being not a record year like 2008, but still well above historical trends. I think one of the real wild cards, though, in terms of the risk, I think, to the outlook, it comes back to energy, both from an out revenue stream. What do energy costs do to the revenues that the farmers receive through corn production and through corn prices, and that, how that spills over to the rest of the market, but also what does it do in terms of the input cost? What we've seen is this a major divergence between crude oil and natural gas. Crude oil prices have, after bottoming at the end of last year, they've risen to $80 per barrel. This is, I think, contributed a lot to the increased revenues in crop prices here recently. But our natural gas prices have remained steadily low. I think a lot of that is attributed to that natural gas is a primarily a domestic market. We have some new supplies that have come on this year, and all those things contributing to big supplies have kept natural gas prices down while crude oil prices have risen. What does this mean in terms of the costs and productions for farmers? Are you going to see different costs move? How's fertilizer going to move compared to chemicals going forward? How do farmers manage that risk in a different market environment where crude oil prices and natural gas prices are not moving together like they did since 2005? Now, as I go out, one of the big impacts that we've had and a lot of the questions that I've been getting is we had this huge run-up in crop prices that translated into a huge run-up in farmland values. What's the path for farmland values going forward? If the farm sector in general, the boom is over, are you looking at a bust, and are you looking at a bust in farmland values? Is there a bubble? Now, if you look at USDA's numbers, and these are as of January 1st data, they saw that in January of earlier this year that cropland values edged down slightly. From about $1,100 to just under that, to about $1,080. So just a slight decline in there. At the same time that they report that cash rents were catching up to this recent rise in land values and starting to rise. This decline in terms of this January, the biggest source of that decline was in the fourth quarter of 2008. When commodity prices collapsed, that led to lower farmland values. Since January, if you look at the Federal Reserve surveys, what we have found in the Federal Reserve Bank's cropland value and ag credit survey reports is that farmland values have been flat since the first quarter. So in the Minneapolis district, which covers northern Wisconsin through the Dakotas and into Montana, non-irrigated cropland values have averaged about $2,500 per acre up in that region. If you look at the Kansas City Federal Reserve, $1,500 per acre, and the Kansas City district covers mainly the Great Plains from Nebraska, Kansas, and Oklahoma. And if you look at the Dallas district, their farmland values have been about $1,250, and they've been averaging that since the end of last year as well. And so what we've seen is that land values have been basically holding steady throughout 2009. Now, there's been some differences in farmland values. First of all, marginal land sales have been very soft. This is very different from the past couple of years, where if you had a stream or some hilly land with a lot of woods and timber, That was prime real estate for wildlife recreation, and so the hunters paid a premium for that. Today, that is probably selling for a little bit of a discount. High-quality land is still strong. The main purchasers remain to be farmers, and they tend to be buying with a lot of cash on hand, so that's been a good sign for that land value market. What we have been seeing, though, in the last month or so has been the return of non-farm investors. They're getting back into the market. Financial crisis last year, a lot of the non-farm investors were having a more difficult time allocating or raising funds for investments in farmland. Now with the easing of the Fed have eased, they're getting back into the market, and they're looking at farmland as a good investment going forward. And a few of them have said that their interest has peaked because they have some concerns about inflation going forward with huge balance sheets on the Federal Reserve System. So in terms of land markets going forward, I think a lot of it depends on, we've seen cash rents increase relative to land values. Land values are capitalized returns on land. But now I think the real question is, and a lot of people have been asking me, is interest rate risk. The Federal Reserve has huge balance sheets. We've increased our balance sheet from about $800 billion to over $1 trillion in the last year. A lot of that to help stimulate the economy and to keep financial markets working. We've been buying a lot of different asset classes, from mortgage-backed securities to auto loans securities to now commercial real estate securities as well, to prop up the market. The real question is that over time, as the economy recovers, we're going to start to unwind it. And anytime we unwind our activity, it's going to come in through interest rates. From January, or from 2007 to 2009, we've dropped the Fed fund rates to zero. I don't have a personal forecast going forward, but I tend to use the futures markets off the board to look at where the futures markets expect the Fed funds rates to be going forward. In August, they had a much steeper path in terms of interest rates. That by the start of 2011, that interest rates on the terms of the Fed funds would be about 3%. October, they backed it off. They're thinking that by the middle to end of 2011, it would only be about 2.5%. Now, if you look at that time frame out, you're looking at under 2% in terms of that Fed funds rates going forward. So what we're looking at from the interest rate perspective is that we are at zero. As the recovery strengthens, as economic activity picks up, the Federal Reserve System and the Board of Governors and the FOMC will raise the Fed funds rates. It's a matter of when and how fast. And that path is really going to depend on the strength of the economy and how inflation increases and evolves over time. So this is kind of where we're looking at the path in terms of the interest rate risk for agriculture and other short-term. Now, this really turns us to the spotlight in terms of credit. Credit does remain tight. We've had the financial crisis ease, but we're now starting to see many reports of commercial banks that are going bankrupt. But when you look at commercial banks, it's not the agricultural banks that are having the challenges. Actually, if you look at agricultural banks, they are, in terms of profits, they're earning return on assets well above and much stronger than all commercial banks in general and smaller commercial banks in more urban centers. Return on assets was about 0.4% at agricultural banks. They were negative in commercial banks, and small commercial banks here in the second quarter of 2009 reported flat return on assets. No profitability, but no losses. And so ag banks, when you look at the amount of bank closures, very few of them are agricultural banks. They tend to be earning a profitability. However, what is happening is that while the financial crisis has eased, their cost of funds have declined a little bit, they are looking at the agricultural situation, and what they see in terms of their loan activity has been a deterioration in charge-offs and delinquency rates. Charge-off and delinquency rates have risen since 2008. They're still below their historical norm since the 1980s farm crisis, but they're rising. Bankers have responded by raising collateral requirements, You have to put more money down in order to get a loan. They've also shortened the maturities. What they've been trying to do is manage their risk and pushing some of that risk back onto the farm sector. We've seen an increased number of participations in terms of using guarantee programs from the federal government to make loans activity out there. But at the end of the day, banks say they have money. They want to make loans. Banks only earn a profit when they make a loan. And as a bank regulator, we always remind banks that they only make a profit when their loan is repaid. And so what they're going to be looking at is they want to make loans, but they want to make sure that that loan is going to be repaid, especially in a market where charge-offs and delinquency rates are rising. One concern about from an ag credit availability standpoint is a lot of the challenges that banks are facing right now is coming from commercial real estate. So while that's outside of agriculture, agriculture is going to have to deal with some of the spillover. If banks have to increase their bank reserves and charge-offs and for loan loss reserves, then what's going to happen is that that's going to leave fewer funds available for agriculture if they have to hold more money back going forward. So I think these are some of the challenges here on charge-offs and delinquency rates. Credit will remain tight going forward. The one benefit, though, is that farmers appear to have learned the lessons of the 1980s and that too much leverage leads to bankruptcy. When I talk about the farm crisis, what I think has happened is that the rest of the country has learned the lessons of the 1980s farm crisis, where too much debt in a rising interest rate market is a recipe for bankruptcy, especially when your asset values fall. So over the last year, capital spending by farmers and the demand for loans has declined. That's to be expected in terms of as the farm boom has eased. And when you look at farm balance sheets, they remain pretty healthy. This chart shows their farmers' ability or to repay their debt. Values above 100, it says that farmers do not have enough income to service their debt. Below 100, farmers have enough income to service debt. Right now, we are not in a situation where we are at a 1980s crisis. We're far from it. Early 1980s, we had situations where farmers were not making enough income to service that debt, and so we're well below that areas. Farmers are not leveraged, and that's been the challenge from investment banks on Wall Street to other financial firms across the globe, is that the ones that are having the problems were the ones that were over-leveraged and had a lot of debt on their balance sheet. Same for households and for business as well in this country. So I think in general, just to wrap it up and to open up for some questions, the recession and financial crisis is ending, and the near-term future really hinges on the recovery. I think there's risks that the recovery is going to be modest, and that means that there's going to be a limited U.S. demand. And so if you think about a recovery and a rebound in agriculture, we're going to have to look beyond the borders of this country. We're going to look for stronger global economies and a weaker dollar providing support for agricultural exports and U.S. commodity prices. I think the tight supplies are going to lead to increased volatility in agriculture. We know supplies are going to be tight. What happens if demand pops up? That's an upside risk. What's going to happen to prices? But in general, I think farm balance sheets remain healthy. Credit will remain tight. And I think land values will hold and remain firm going forward. I don't see any collapse in farmland values in the future. And ultimately, I think the future of agriculture is going to be shaped how farmers manage their risks during the next farm rebound. And I think a farm rebound will come with this recovery. Thank you.
Jason, thank you very much. We have a series of questions. I'd like to do a follow-up on this, your last point here about how farmers manage the risk during the next farm rebound. What do you think are the risk management lessons from what we've just been through that producers should apply going forward in terms of their figuring out how to manage the risk?
Yeah, I think the one risk management lesson from our standpoint, they've been doing it for quite some time, is to manage their debt, manage their leverage. we know in terms of agriculture, I think there's going to be some opportunities emerging. And so as agriculture makes those investments to seize those emerging opportunities, they need to not rely exclusively on debt to make those investments and to maintain that leverage into more historical levels and not being over leveraged. I think that's the one one lesson going forward. What everything is going on in terms of the lessons that the rest of the country, Wall Street, is learning, it's a lesson of leverage, and I think that's the lesson that farmers need to go forward with, is make prudent investments, but making sure that you have some equity involved in there, and not relying solely on debt.
One of our participants has a question around Asian markets and asks, will the Asian markets lag behind the U.S. in economic recovery? And they asked, if so, how far behind? We're looking for how clear is your crystal ball here.
Right. I think one of the challenges we've had is traditionally that the rest of the world has relied on the U.S. to lead economic recoveries. And I don't know if that's going to be the case this time. I think there's a good possibility that instead of the U.S. leading the global economy out of this recession, it's going to be the other global economies leading the U.S. out of this economic recovery. Now, that's kind of it's a different set of circumstances. Asian markets rely on our consumer buying a lot of consumer products that they make and the export activity. So I'm thinking that in terms of this time period, there's potential opportunities where what China needs to do in terms of rebalancing a global trade is their consumers need to start consuming more. And if they have stronger economic growth, which they're going to try to do with an emerging middle class, and their consumers save a little bit less and start spending more to rebalance this financial imbalances that we've built up with global trade over the past decade, I think it's a possibility that it's Asian markets that are going to not lag the U.S. in the recovery, but could potentially lead us out. And we, that as a result, we have to find ways to sell products to global markets, especially these emerging markets. And how do we go to do that? I think agriculture is a great example of one industry that can lead this, you know, in terms of exporting to foreign economies. But I think it's more of Asian markets are probably going to lead us instead of us lagging them.
Another question has to do with the impact of the weak U.S. dollar on the volume of future ag exports. And I'd like to add just a little. Over the weekend, there's been a lot of reaction in the press, at least around what's Dubai's recent statements and actions, and had some impact on the value of the dollar. So that's a short-term, you view those kinds of things as a short-term spike, long-term spike, and do we have to continue to have a weakening dollar to increase our exports?
Yeah. I think in terms of the value of the dollar, we know that a weaker value of the dollar makes our goods more affordable, and it really is stimulative to the volume of export activity that we have to foreign countries. So that's been a positive. We've seen that here through 2009, that as the year has progressed, as the value of the dollar weakened, we saw agricultural exports in terms of some of the volumes increase as well. I think there's some policy implications in terms of the volume, in terms of we need to open markets, especially for those proteins, the meats, the pork, the beef, to get our volumes in there. Dubai, that's another example of too much leverage in certain areas where you make investments and you're highly leveraged, and if you cannot, in uncertain markets and as markets evolve, if you're not able to make those payments, then you're in a position where solvency issues and liquidity issues arise and create some challenges there. I think that lower value of the dollar I don't know where it's going to go going forward. I think there's going to be some volatility. There's potential for volatility there. If we have some risks that emerge in terms of the financial markets and people go to a safe haven type of environment looking for that safe haven investment, what we've seen over the last year is that they'll come and buy U.S. securities, and that'll lead to a rising dollar. At the same time, on the flip side, if global economies, emerging countries grow faster than the United States, there's going to be an incentive for investors to invest in those faster growing countries, not in the U.S., and that potentially keeps the dollar low. And so I think there's a lot of uncertainty around that dollar market, but in general, lower values of the dollar are supportive for agricultural exports.
You talked a lot about commodity prices, and you did talk some about energy prices. What are the forecasts about input prices going forward? Fuels, fertilizers, chemical?
I was just, the one recent one that I've been looking at is in terms of the USDA cost of production. They're looking at them rising between 8 and 9% in terms of fuels prices in there for 2010. I think a lot of it in terms of the cost is going to be, when do farmers hedge appropriately? When do they buy in terms of the timing of that market? But I think you're looking at probably some higher prices in terms of fuels out there for the market and the input costs.
We have a question about CRP policy, which, and I think I don't know what the consensus is, but a general feeling that the changes in CRP policy are going to be there's land coming out of CRP. And what do you think that might impact that might have on land prices as the recession resumes over the next several years?
Right. I think what that'll do is, obviously, if you increase the supply of land in those certain areas that it's coming out in terms of the market, you could potentially bring down more supply. If it's not matched by a rise in demand, that from an economic theory standpoint, says you'd bring down prices in general out there. I don't necessarily know if that's going to be kind of the case or not. I think it'll probably have more of a muted effect on land values in general. It might have more of a location-specific impacts, but I think in general land values, I don't think that'll have this opening up of the CRP will have too major of an impact, because much of the CRP has been kind of that marginal ground and land out there, and a lot of the demand so far has been for that that high quality land activity that produces high yields out there. So I wouldn't expect overall, in aggregate, much of an impact. In certain locations, if there's a lot of it that comes up out of the market, that might have some geographical differences, though.
And back to energy ethanol, one of the questions that we have is, do you anticipate changes in the EPA requirements for ethanol in domestic gasoline affecting agriculture commodity prices?
Yeah, well, I think in terms of if they change the EPA requirements, I think it will have some impact. Ethanol is, in my opinion, a government mandated requirement. It's driven by government sector policy. If you raise the requirements for ethanol and domestic gasoline, you're going to increase the demand for ethanol. You're going to increase the demand for corn, and that's going to have some uptick on prices, especially the corn price scenario. Might not be as much as what it was expected in terms of, I don't expect a 2006 return of profitability, but it would have an uptick in terms of prices. As a result, if you would boost prices again, that does have some negative impact on the livestock sector if it raises their feed costs, unless they can use some of the byproducts coming out of those plants. But right now, we have enough capacity to basically meet the requirements through 2015. So it would increase the demand a little bit, and it would have some uptick on the corn prices in general.
Just two last questions, Jason, and then it's been really good and informative. I really appreciate the information that you've provided here. And one is kind of back to the more general economy and about housing in the housing sector. And what are your expectations about rising interest rates and their impact on housing markets?
Yeah, housing has been the biggest industry that we need to think about in terms of economic activity, because it was really the one sector that started this financial crisis and the steep recession that we had. What we've had from long-term rates for housing still remain quite low, and so that's supportive of the housing sector. But housing in general, real challenge that we have in housing is that a lot of the recent demand in housing activity has been government stimulus driven, with the first time home buyers tax credit. And as that ends, there's been a lot of questions about how sustainable is that demand out there for new homes and for increasing home sales. And so what we've seen with that going forward is that we've had stronger entry-level housing markets across the country, but that has not yet spurred stronger sales in the mid-tier market. So anything below $200,000, sales are actually pretty strong across the country. But if you go above $200,000, they tend to be generally weak. And so we've had that stimulus, that tax credit has sparked the housing sector, but it really hasn't really led into something that's probably more sustainable going forward. As interest rates rise, that's going to have a negative impact on housing activity in terms of it's going to increase the cost of purchase. It's going to increase monthly payments. Hopefully, most of the purchasers have locked into long-term loans and did not do adjustable rate mortgages, so that the rising interest rates won't have as much of an impact on monthly mortgages term. That was really the challenge that we had in 2004, is that with record low interest rates, people were still locking into adjustable rate mortgages and buying houses beyond their means. And so when interest rates started to rise, they couldn't afford the monthly payments. So I don't think we're going to have that situation again as long as people use these low interest rates to lock in a 30-year mortgage.
Okay. Well, this is thank you very much. I guess I would just give you the opportunity to provide what you think the challenges might be for those of us ag professionals working with farm and ranch families to help them think positively and be successful. Have you got some closing thoughts for us as we move forward through this winter meetings session time?
I'm actually quite optimistic about agriculture over the next year. I think there's more upside risk than what there is in terms of downside risk. I've been putting at it in terms of this way. Corn is $4. We've had bumper crops, and demand has been terrible. And if you put it in that framework, if demand starts to rebound and we have lean supplies, I think there's potential for some upward risk and for some opportunities out there for agriculture. And to position themselves, they need to remember the lessons that they probably learned in the 1980s, or their fathers and grandfathers told them about the 1980s, in terms of manage your balance sheet well, manage your debt. If you come in with a solid financial plan, bankers will have credit available to make your investments to seize those market opportunities.
Well, thank you very much. This has been really good. And so We appreciate you taking the time, Jason, to be with us, and thank you to our audience. For those of you out there, if you're interested in getting the web links in a file right on your computer, just highlight one of these three files that you see there in the download pod, and if you click on Save to My Computer, then there instructions that you just follow and click on. These are virus-free files, and download them. So we look forward to seeing you all next week, next Wednesday, same time, and thank you all.